Last time on Rugby League Live, Wakefield Wildcats.
Ryan gets the ball back on the inside. Wow, what a start here from the Wildcats, because Craig Hall has stormed away to score a try.
We improved today. We didn't get beaten on effort. We got beaten on certain moments in the game. We came up with the wrong choice in some areas, which hurt us. But we made some strides today. We made some small ones last week, but we played a lot better this week than last week. And if we can improve like that again next week, you know, we're starting to get back into the frame.
Hull FC, Huddersfield Giants.
Now they're going out the back. Here's Brough. Goes himself. He's over. And that's the first score of the night. And he slides in. And Danny Brough, the former Hull man, has the first points of the night.
Defending is not about talent. Defending is about, like you say, attitude and effort-based things, and showing that will and desire to actually stop people getting over your line. And I thought that's what we did today. And we've done for big parts of the season, if I'm being honest with you.
I don't think we played well enough to score points. We aren't good enough side. You know, we can ill afford 6 or 7 blokes to toss in performances like that and expect to come away with a result.
Doncaster, Bradford Bulls.
Palafi gets it to Sidlow out of the back for Gaskell. Gaskell for a hat-trick. Lee Gaskell will score his hat-trick for the Bradford Bulls.
For a team which over the last 10 weeks has scored on average 12 points, to score 38, was it, against a team like Bradford is obviously a step in the right direction for us.
I thought we were poor. I thought we were tired as well. But that's probably a result of me this week. I pushed them really hard at training. I mean, maybe a little bit too hard. But I just thought we were off our game today in every aspect.
Sheffield Eagles, Halifax.
Not being a full
time again, Morris.
Here we go, that's down this right hand side with Warrensey, and Warrensey's got in for a hat trick. Sam Smeaton with a money ball.
We scored 36 points. You know, the pleasing thing is we only let 2 tries in, so plenty of work to do, but it's a much and a great win because it puts a bit of breathing space for us now.
Disappointed with that, our performance. Disappointed with the first half, the way we started the game. Yeah, it was a tough day at the office today. I thought Sheffield were good and thought they beat us up a little bit round the ruck.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson. Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
Oh, look at that score. Bradford, we're tired. So what's training? What's training score?
Sorry. I apologise tonight, Mark will say. I'm a little bit tired.
Bradford,
for
yesterday, what do you make of them?
Yeah, the...
Were they tired?
Quite clearly, Gaskell was the main man again. But what they seemed to do, they didn't seem to give Doncaster the respect they deserved. They turned the tap on, and when they turned the tap on, it was very good. But then when they turned it off, they just give Doncaster a sniff. And the scoreline tells you it's a game of touch and pass. But yeah, with Lawsy saying the players look tired and I trained them too hard, please don't mention. Let's not mention tired again on the show for the next hour.
About the Bulls, but I want to speak to you about Doncaster. You've seen them a few times now. No win in 10. No, they were in the top 4 last year. What's gone wrong?
Well, I guess you look at maybe the dual registration one they had, but from yesterday's performance, you know, scoring 38 points against the second best team in the Championship, and certainly on spirit and character, where I showed yesterday, I'm finding it pretty hard myself how they've not won a game and what they played 10 yeah. 11 games there. And on that to performance again, the creativity, what they showed defensively, they looked okay. Obviously they're playing the second best team in the Championship with the quality of players they've got, but they're not far from a win, certainly on that spirit and the character they showed. Doncaster, I'm sure the coach Cookie were delighted as well when he said with a stat the volley averaged 12, yesterday scored 38, so hopefully now this will be the kick start for their season.
They're not a panicking club. I remember when they lost to, was it Siddle in the cup, they got beaten, didn't they, in the Challenge Cup. Tony Miller offered to resign and Carl. Yeah. Said, you know, look, don't be silly, we need to keep building, and he was proven right, and he's not a man that would panic, but that's not good, is it, 10? And Cookie has said he's going to step down from playing. He said if they're stuck, he'll play. Yeah. What do you make of that?
I think it's the right call. You know, he wants to give the youngsters around there, obviously with the dual reds. I think Abdul came in there yesterday. Reynolds formed a good half-decent partnership, to be honest with you. So, yeah, he wants to give somebody else an opportunity. If he can offer something, he may do. But as I say, Cookie, he's having his influence as a coach there. And as I say, the spirit, what they showed there, the character, then they're not far off the first win. And hopefully it'll kick-start their season.
Phil, I think the big thing, just on Doncaster, relates back to what we've been saying about Hull at the start of the programme. 3 young kids on dual reg for Doncaster. And the question would be, why aren't they playing for Hull? I mean, how good were they? Are they ready to make that step up to Super League?
Well, I've seen Abdul play. He looks a promising player for
me. Well, I'll tell you what.
I just can't understand it.
Well, to be honest with you, the way Price and Sneed are doing at Hull, they're not creating anything. They're not scoring many points. So why not? Because at the end of the day, you know what the A-team did for you? If the young kids in the A-team was playing well and you wasn't playing well in the first team, you got to kick up the backside, because on the Thursday night you were either going to Norton Park or you're going up to Workington or you're going to over the boulevard yourself. You got dropped into the A-team. That player deserved an opportunity, and if he performed, then he stayed there. So you might be right, Phil, it might be a change of direction on the halfbacks there, dropping Price and Sneed.
I just think you look at every club in Super League at the moment and they're bringing through some youngsters of note. You look at Huddersfield, Jake Connor, you know, he's now starting to become a recognised Super League player. You look at the successful teams historically, Leeds, St Helens, Wigan. It's done on the basis of, yes, they signed the odd star name, but it's mainly bringing through and giving a chance to youngsters. Warrington are starting to do it now, and they will make mistakes, but that's how they learn. You look at Hull and you think, you've got two lads who played for the England Academy successfully this autumn, who are playing at Doncaster. What is it at Hull?
There's your Nicholas as well. It was an absolute joke, because when he played for Hull, he was outstanding, you know. And then the coach, and also to that that fraudster himself, as we've been speaking off air, you know, Sean McRae, the coach, you know, quite clearly didn't rate him. Well, I tell you what, he wasn't a bad player. They totally knocked his confidence, sent him here, there and everywhere. The kid went missing for the game, decided to have another go. I think he went to Wilkiar, and for whatever reason there, and now he's back at Doncaster. But kid can play a little bit.
They did the same with Tommy Lee. At the early stage of Tommy Lee's career, we were told in academy football that he was arguably one of the brightest prospects around. Now, whether he would have become one, there's always fallout, but it seemed to be he was never properly given a chance at Hull to establish a position. What is it at Hull about not wanting to play the juniors that are coming through? If you're going to lose anyway, at least give the juniors some experience.
Well, I think it's quite certainly the people who are doing the recruitment and the people who are recommending and saying A, B, C and D, quite clearly them people should have been in that position, because there's talent what they've got. They're not giving that opportunity.
Well,
those two
players would be playing for Salford against them if the roles were reversed.
Do you know whenever I played amateur rugby, when you went to Hull, you were going up against the best kids. It were always Wigan, when you went to Wigan, it were tough. When you went to Hull, I played for Siddle, you knew they were going to play some amazing kids, and they just thought, I agree with you, they just don't seem to be that conveyor belt that they should be, because they're the best amateur sides. When I coached Siddle, it used to be like four in the top division. Amateurs, I don't understand why they aren't coming through. Going back to the dual edge, another reason why I hate the dual edge is we have a young lad at Mohan, maybe not, they want the brightest. It will go into a different club that have different names, different calls, a different style of rugby. So all of a sudden, if he goes a halfback, for example, we call certain players, then he'll go into another, he'll go into a different team, didn't know any of players, but didn't even know any of calls. So you've got to learn two different calls, and it can change from one week to the next. 21s or second team, you played the exact same, you had the same philosophy in how you wanted to play, you had the same calls. You could just go in and out seamlessly. And I just think at the moment.
Also, I can remember when our coach at Barrow and Des Johnson brought in three players from Huddersfield. Was it Adam Walker or was it Johnny? Well, anyway,
Adam Walker. Yeah.
He brought in Adam Walker. He didn't even ask me anyway. I didn't even know he brought him. Anyway, they just turned up at training. Adam Walker, Joe Waddell there, and Greg McNally. Anyway, they turned up for training. Anyway, introduced themselves. Thought, oh, all right. What are you on, prop, centre foot? All right. No, I better find a place for you. So. My philosophy in training, everybody gets their own ball, so it's all about ball skills, the amount of you. But we're looking at about the dual registration, I can't stand it anyway, it should be here. But quite clearly, them players, they were too good for Barrow, but because we weren't getting a start on the field, but unfortunately, and again, the reason why it doesn't work, they didn't want to be part of us. They just didn't want to be there. Yeah. They just didn't want to be there, because quite clearly there was too good from there, and they're not with them day in, day out. They don't really get to know them as teammates. They can't get a bit of spirit. They can't get a bit of culture.
But
so
also, they're playing with a different calibre of player.
Correct, absolutely. Absolutely.
So when they're ready to offload and there's
nobody there,
it reflects badly on them as well.
Well, as I say, when they turned up, all right, prop, centre fullback. All right, I better find a place for you then.
I also don't understand how...
Because you've got to play them, haven't you?
Yeah, and I also don't understand how then do you, as say the of coach of Barrow, keep the players happy that you're dropping
exactly.
forms.
Correct. Yeah,
because
yeah.
then you're going to bring him in for 1 week, then you get rid of him and say to lad, you dropped, and he lost his 150 quid.
And then, and then you don't have them the week after, you say, oh, last week, I didn't do that, but you know, get lost. Yeah, exactly.
But then exactly. you've got it at Huddersfield as well with a young kid like Oliver Roberts, who gets, you know, an opportunity at Huddersfield because he's got potential at Bradford. For whatever reason, because you've only got the 17 on game day, there's no reserve grade, he can't learn the Huddersfield way of doing things, and he ends up finding himself at Sheffield.
Yeah,
it's not fair on him either.
We're all in agreement, bring back the A team, find the finances for the, because, you know, surely, you know, after the World Cup 2013, all this money what was generated, can't that be used to bring out for the game, or is it just for the international? Is it just for the international?
Is it a TV deal?
Yeah.
Well, exactly, you know, so surely there should be money there looking after the nucleus of our game there, and to bring it back.
The interesting thing is, over the next 7 years, Sky giving £17 million in this Sky Tri project, which is to encourage more people to participate in the sport. Great. But the gap between participating in the sport and playing in the Super League is not going to be bridged by spending the money there. It'd be better siphoning off some of that 17 million quid and saying every team is going to have an A team. And if you can't afford to have an A team, you can't lose.
I'll tell you what as well, Phil, you know yourself, and I'm sure, Richard, you know, you've been around and the same. They've got some decent crowds as well, didn't they? And again, it's a little bit of extra revenue for each club. So, yeah, and the speckies, like watching the up-and-coming youngsters who are representing their club. Representing their clubs coming through.
Well,
it's great.
Had a full house when Dwayne Chambers played.
Hey, my son played in that game. Do you know what? And he said, Dad, you know what? He said, I've never seen anybody so fast. So I said, well, you won't do because he's an Olympic sprinter. I said, what? I said, he'll kill me when I say what he says. So I said, well, what's it like as a rugby league player? He went, he's absolute rubbish.
But wasn't that just
a publicity stunt?
They got 4,000 on the gate for an 18 game.
Yeah.
It was a great.
And if only
they'd
have played John Gallagher in the 18, who knows?
But did you see the highlights? Like he would do tip overs and forward rolls and everything when he got tackled at Lob. But my son said you've never seen anybody so quick. Yeah.
Fair
play to him. He was useless.
Putting his body on the line in the sport, he had no idea what he was doing.
Gary
Mason.
Remember when
I
hit the box?
Yeah, the box.
Signed for London.
Mm.
Don't think he ever played.
It's not the type of game you can just rock up and have a go, is it, Super League, Luke, to be fair?
I hope not. I hope we haven't got that low down, have we?
But we can't have trialists anymore. Going back to the 18. You can't have trialists, can you? You know, you can't bring somebody in to play in the slightly less rarefied air and to try the game out in the A team, be it a rugby union convert or somebody who perhaps has been an athlete at another sport. We want to encourage those players, but where are we going to play them?
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I wanted to ask you, Bradford tired after playing Hull KR last week. This is an issue you've raised a few times.
Absolutely.
How are the Championship sides going to cope with the intensity of that middle eight, having to play Super League and some good Super League teams as well? And then have to back it up for 7 weeks.
Mark, I'll just rephrase that, what you just said. James Law said the players were tired because he trained them too hard this week. Not because of the OKR game. They were tired because he trained them too hard.
But I think
the
will have taken a lot out.
Well, but he said he said he trained them too hard. That's why they were tired. Could he train too hard, Luke?
My argument is it's not the training too hard. I think you can train. I think you should try and replicate a game. I think you need to train as hard as possible. The argument is sometimes when they keep you there, I don't know if coach has got a couple of kids and don't really want to go home till after they've been bathed and bed, you know what I mean? And you turn up, well, it is, I've had that before. Yeah. You turn up at 8 o'clock, for you start getting a bit of physio, you start doing all this prehab stuff, and then you're rocking up, but you've been training for 5, you think, well, can't I train for like 10 hours? No one trains for 10 hours. You can train too long. I don't think you can train too hard. I think you can train too long when you're just stuck there for ages.
Here's something else that I've noticed as well. Warm-ups, pre-game warm-ups. Some clubs are out there for close on 30 minutes.
And I'll tell you why.
Surely that's too long.
I'll tell you what it is. I thought about this once before when I was at Salford. And we trained for about 35 minutes and Leeds came out for about 15 minutes and spanked us. All your preparation is done in the week. When you're confident, you feel good. You feel good. All you're doing is warming the body up because you know we've done everything in our power to get our bodies right, our preparations right. When you're a bit off, I used to when I coached little amateur because half the lads used to blob every week because they were always working away. They kept me on a training, basically. Coronation Street, you're on, or whatever, and fish and chips. So I used to have them training before, so I won't. We're about an hour. Because you try to fit in what you missed out, and I think that when you're a club that don't feel fully prepared, you feel like you've got to try and get that little bit of extra training and get them sharp. But when you're a team full of confidence and you know you're prepared right, I once heard Tony Smith say this. He spoke to Thorman about being a coach. Obviously, Thorman started getting a coaching, and he said on game day, he don't really need to do anything because he feels like he's done. If he's done his job, that's it. Game day is all about the players. Yeah, then it's them who go out on the field. They need to do it. He's giving them the tools. They need to go out and do it. And I think the teams that walk the longest generally lose.
Yeah.
I heard that about Sam Allardyce at the football, to be fair. They asked one of the players about it. He said he comes in for about 2 minutes before the game just to wish him well. Because he said he's told them everything they need to do in the week.
It's exactly
need to
what
tell
Wayne
them
Bennett
again.
Does. He just wanders around specific players, tells them, you know what you're doing today, and walks out.
Yeah.
Going back to your point, though, I think what we're seeing slightly emerge... I mean, we don't know how the middle eight's going to go. I mean, the excitement for the remainder of the season, is it be the first time we've had it? So whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea, it really doesn't matter because we've not seen it, so there's an excitement in that. I think what we probably do know is that there is going to be this £1 million game between the fourth and the fifth team in this middle eight. The minimum that a championship team can aim for is to be in that match. The worst case scenario
for a Lee or
a Bradford is that they're building up for that one game that is likely to be at a Super League club for 80 minutes. So actually, do they need to beat that many Super League clubs to be in that game?
No.
Probably not. No. They need to beat the other championship clubs where they know the intensity, going back to your original point.
Mm.
Do they really need to beat four Super League teams? No, they probably don't. They just need to make sure they're at worst fifth.
Mm.
So, but will that prepare them for Super League the following year? That's the argument.
Where do them players come from? So when the Super League Grand Final ends, when's that game take place? The week before? That takes place the week before, so am I right? When the semi-finals take place?
I genuinely don't know.
So you're telling me within a week they've then got to get a Super League squad?
Yeah.
How is that feasible? I mean, Lee are probably...
By dual registration.
I mean, Lee are probably in a better position than anyone else because they're already full-time. They've already got decent quality of players and they could make a few additions, thinking they're probably going to get up. But how do you then put pen to paper and say to a player, will you sign for us, we're going to be in Super League, if you don't actually know you're going to be there?
Well, there's another issue as well. If you don't get into Super League and you're going to get less money the following year to stay in the Championship, how do you even keep together the squad that you've got? So if you jump for Super League and don't get it, you're going to be doubly penalised.
I'm just worried it's going to be that yo-yo situation
where it used
to be just basic same players. I mean, when we signed, who did we sign? A winger, Graveyard. As soon as we signed him at Salford, I knew we were getting relegated. We got relegated 3 years on top.
Yeah.
Who like a genius?
But isn't that the issue?
Oh, God,
that
we
haven't got enough quality players.
I used to enjoy seeing who Wakefield were going to sign and think, all right, another reject from there, another reject from there, another reject from there. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's
but
all
who
good
else
stuff.
Is on the market?
There's
and the thing is that those players who you're calling a reject will get paid more the following year because they're all that is available to recruit.
I think the concept could be better if it were just somehow, and I know that it can't work this way, but it could somehow, you could push it earlier on. So they had whoever won, then you had a little bit more time to get into the
but
market.
But you've still got to have the players.
I know, yeah, I know.
All right, Scoey, still here?
Just.
You're miserable, son.
Just.
Tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, just, I guess.
Well, we're going to move on now. We're going to talk about the Castleford Tigers. Big win for them over the injury and suspension-plagued Red Devils. Are we surprised how tight it was, Rich? 22-20?
I guess in terms of the number of players Salford had out, but I think Castleford would just be happy with the win. Sounded like, judging by reading the feed on Twitter during the game, Salford scored very late to make it tight, and it was, I think they scored in the 79th minute.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Castle will be very happy with the win, especially after that awful performance at Widnes the week before.
It was all about winning, wasn't it, on Sunday?
We've had it, a win's a win. The old saying, the old philosophy, the old cliche, what you say, Darryl Powell has said himself it wasn't the best of performance, and they went in there expected to win, so there's a lot more pressure on Cass because obviously the situation there at Salford, but at the end of the day, Cass got the 2 points at Salford, and Darryl's happy, and they'll move on.
Phil, you're not as confident that Cass are going to make the top four this year, are you?
I'm not sure they'll make the top four. I just think it's interesting that coaches are talking about performance less and they're talking about getting the 2 points. That 2 points took Castleford above Salford. That's the prime aim that week. This week, the prime aim will be to beat Catalan, who are around them in the table, and we're not as bothered about performance. It's about result. The trouble is, we're never going to beat Australia until we get performance. So are we sacrificing quality for just getting a result?
We've got to beat New Zealand first, Phil. Never mind Australia.
Well,
there's New Zealand as well.
New Zealand might be number one in the world, but I'm not doing right, exactly. Australia to even get to.
Well, this is what I'm saying. You know, let's not forget about New Zealand. We forget about New Zealand, don't we? But anyway.
I think the good thing is we're bringing through a lot of good kids at the moment. I think, as we said, at every club there's some really talented youngsters coming through. The problem is, I'd like to see them playing an international next week, even if it was England nights. I think we need to see if these young kids that we've identified can take that step up and not wait until we play New Zealand at the end of the season, because I think again you're coming in against a team that's so proven and is playing so well, if they've got everybody available to them, that you're not going to risk so many of the youngsters. My worry with a team like Cass at the moment is just now about getting the team.
I know we've just been talking about the with Cass for Derry, we've been talking a little bit about talent around and there, and again, they're talking about, again, with this marquee sign, again, we're talking about, you know, enough talent around the place and all this sort of thing. But the question I'm going to put out there, which we've spoke about, I guess, a little bit before, but how many marquee players have we got around in the game? We haven't got half a dozen. If anybody can name me half a dozen marquees, and surely I don't know what Luke would think about this, but let's just say, for instance, Huddersfield signed a marquee player, and we're looking at the young kid, the centre, we just mentioned a couple of times.
Jake Connell
there, centre, up-and-coming centre. Huddersfield, Ken decides, OK, marquee signing, we're getting Greg Ignis. Greg, what's Greg now, 32, 34? Greg Ignis is getting $350,000 a year as a marquee signing, pushes out a young player in Jake Connell, or even so may take Cudjoe's position. How would that go down in the dressing room, look, would you think?
My argument is, what determines a marquee player? Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, the price, the money, what you pay for it, by
all
accounts.
So,
you know,
I'm not sure it works like that.
You know,
but who does decide? Like Scully says, if someone were getting pushed, say for Leroy or Jake got pushed out for somebody, who says he's a marquee player?
I think it's slightly more complicated than that, which is why it didn't get through the first time. Because originally it was, if you've got some money, sign someone, and it won't count on the salary cap. I think now you can nominate a homegrown player.
So Sam can come back to Wigan.
Yeah,
that's the.
That's it. Sam can come back to Wigan. Sam Burgess can go to Salford.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Kennedy-Dell can go to St Helens. There are players that you can bring in whose a proportion of their salary will not count under the salary cap. There are young players who you bought through your team who you can nominate as your marquee player who you can pay more, and that doesn't count.
And does it have to be homegrown?
If you nominate somebody from inside your squad. But it gives you the money to distribute among the other players. Because if you've got 1.8 million in total and you can bring somebody in and pay them more and it doesn't count on the salary cap, then you've got some allocated money that you can give to the other players.
Well, to be
so
honest,
it doesn't necessarily mean
so why don't just
that they're going to come
well,
in and
honest,
disrupt
really,
the dressing
well, we're talking
structure.
About the marquee, but why don't they just up the salary cap into £2 million instead of 1.8?
Why don't you just scrap the salary cap?
Well, yeah, why not?
Then go back to boom and bust and people spend billions of pounds.
Well, we've had that anyway.
If we bring in a marquee player, all the teams that are going to be advantaged by that are those that can sign a marquee player. So the haves will have, and the have-nots will be further away, and every minute won't matter as much.
But what I'm saying is,
I'd argue though, you can sell. The proposal was you can sell said golden ticket.
No, I don't think that was ever on the table. That was
marvellous.
What is wrong with that? If Salford want to go waste their money and buy an X, Y, and Z, and Cass and Wakey both get $150,000 on the back of it and can strengthen their squad, I don't think that's such a bad thing.
It's more to do with the fact that there are. We need to stop the talent drain of our own players, so this enables you to potentially do that, or gives you a tool where you can do that. And we need to attract some big names in because we're an entertainment industry, and there is a feeling that the top clubs aren't able to go and sign. Imagine there's a rugby union player. Who's a good rugby union player at the moment?
John Gallagher.
George North.
He was great. He was the best player in the world at the
time. I've heard of him. George North.
All right, George North. Let's say Wigan want to sign George North, who is completely unproven at rugby league level, but he would be prepared for a certain amount of money to come to the club, and Wigan were allowed to buy him and it not count on their salary cap, then that's good for the game.
Okay, Gary Etherington, world famous for his tightness in player contract discussions. No, I'll stand by it, no allegedly needed.
He has a wage structure.
Kevin Sinfield repeatedly said the players here could have left and got more money elsewhere. Greg Inglis comes from the NRL on $300,000 a year. All of a sudden, everyone at Leeds goes, whoa,
Kevin Sinfield said that until this year when he said we need to look again at the salary cap.
Let me...
That's a fair point. How does that work at Leeds? They can't go on and spend $300,000
a year. Hold on, I put the question there. Look, you know, if Greg Inglis did come to Huddersfield on $350,000 a year, would the players go, exactly what you just said there?
Luke could say, what, he's getting paid less than me?
Yeah, I wish.
But you know where I'm coming from. It would upset the dressing room, wouldn't it?
But what if Greg Inglis doubled the crowd and B, made you more competitive?
You'd want him as a player.
If you didn't have him, you knew somebody else was going to sign him, because he's on the market.
If you could get him, you'd want him on your team, but you'd also then be thinking, how much money is he getting?
Well, exactly.
But hasn't that always happened? When you played, didn't that happen?
Oh, yeah, but...
I suspect Ellery came in on a fair wage.
Absolutely, but what you tried to do as you felt as though you was up to that class, you got near enough to that sort of wage structure. There won't be anybody, because they would have to pay huge, huge dollars to get Greg Inglis, and it won't be far off the market, $350,000, by the way. You know, any Huddersfield player, they went knocking on Ken's door and saying, Ken, Greg Inglis, he's only got two arms and two legs, you know, and he's got two eyes the same as me, there's not a lot of difference, you know, I want a pay rise. You know what I'm saying, Phil?
But I reckon there is a lot of difference, and I think there are marquee players.
How does that sit? How does that sit in the dressing room?
It wouldn't.
if he drops the ball, he can't kick like that.
Exactly. It's the old story with Alex Murphy and Tom Volanoven. And Tom got paid a hell of a lot of money because he played. He got paid for the 12 months, and so Alex said, well, I won't pay for the 12 months because he don't play in the summer and I don't, so I want the same money. Exactly the same. It would cause uproar. There's no two ways about it.
Well, it's interesting. It's not as easy as you're making out.
No, it's not.
Well, I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying there's too many marquee players out there.
From an English point of view, you know, I want English talent. Who would be a marquee player? Who would be the $200,000 mark?
I suppose that's what you're saying. You're basically saying it could help us poach, aren't you?
Yeah,
from the other club.
It makes us buyers rather than sellers.
To be fair, at the moment,
Who would you buy from Rugby Union? Who would you buy?
Sam Burgess.
Yeah, but Sam's not a Rugby Union player. Sam's a Rugby League player.
Stephen Myler.
Would Steve struggle to organise it that way? It's a different game.
It's a really strange situation. I played with Stephen Myler, and he was our reserve halfback at Salford. Yeah.
Chris
Ashton. He was playing our second team.
No, Chris Ashton.
You know, so
yeah,
again,
I'll play with him.
The marquee player, what...
It's an interesting point.
At the moment, there is talk of people like Paul Gallen coming over here.
Oh, was he? Gallen's 33, 34.
But the fact is, nobody could afford him under the current salary cap because of what the wages are in Australia. But would you want somebody of Paul Gallen? We all got excited at the start of this year about Todd Carney coming over, playing for Catalan, because of the quality of the player, because it enhances the competition, because all of a sudden, pundits like us were saying, we think Catalan might break into the top four this year because they've got Todd Carney. When you go to grounds like Huddersfield, fans might go to watch Luke Robinson against Todd Carney. I think it benefits the sport at this stage to be able to go out and sign some players. The danger is it detracts from what the sport says it's trying to do and have equality between the two.
Well, you look at
you're saying
there then, Phil, the marquee signings that we're going to sign from abroad. So how the hell does that, from a point of view on the international side of it, the international calendar, how the hell are we going to close it on New Zealand, Australia, if we're bringing in their players who quite clearly are going to be past the spell by then?
Because you hope that if Paul Gallen or Greg Inglis went to Huddersfield, Jake Connor would become a better player. I would call as evidence on that basis.
How would Jake Connor be a better player if he's signed the stands?
Well, he won't, but he wouldn't be necessarily sat in the stands. He's got a benchmark.
He might be on dual reg at Battle.
Roy Powell and Paul Medley played in a team full of Australians.
That was Harry Jepson's fault. Our great friend Harry Jepson.
But they became better players on the back of that.
They became better players because when they got shut of them all, they decided to give them game time, and that's how they became better players.
But they played amongst those Aussies because they were young kids who looked at the training methods, not necessarily the drinking ones. Those Aussies. Yeah.
What are you saying, Phil?
The
what
ice baths,
Chinese.
I'm saying we're in the entertainment industry, and it gives us some power to go out and sign some players that will put bums on seats. It won't be at every club.
Let me steal an idea from baseball then, which I've looked up on Wikipedia to make sure I know what I'm talking about. We set the salary cap at £2 million, say. Arbitrary figure, call it whatever you want. You can spend that, you can spend over that, but every pound you spend, a percentage of that has to go back to the RFL as a luxury tax, which can then be spent on whatever, distribute the wealth.
The only worry I've got with a marquee player is that we have not got every club in Super League spending the salary cap at the moment. That detracts from the word super.
Should that be a prerequisite of being a Super League club?
Absolutely, 100%.
Danger of putting all your eggs in one basket, Scott. We've seen it before. Yep. Big money signing, does his knee, first game of the season, $300,000 down the drain.
There's your answer. You've answered the question. Mr. Wilson, you've answered the question. And one thing for sure, it would upset the dressing room. We've just got an example here from Luke Robinson. Bruffy, Ken, can I have a word? He can't kick goals and he hasn't got a kicking game like me. And he's got a point.
But what happens if Huddersfield nominate Danny Bruff as their marquee player because they don't want to go out and sign somebody? And it just means that a proportion of his wage doesn't count as the salary cap, so they've got money left over that they can give to Luke Robinson.
So the homegrown situation, no, it doesn't matter. So the homegrown doesn't matter 20 age, and it's not homegrown from 20 to 25.
This is the debate that's going to take.
Well, it's going to be. I'll tell you what then. If that's what you're saying there, we'd say it with Bruff here, but it's going to be like a dad's army marquee signing, then, isn't it? You know, if you look at it, the likes of 30-year-olds and whatever.
It's going to give the clubs the opportunity.
Well, just up the salary cap then. Instead of get rid of the title marquee player, just up the salary cap to £2 million to £2.2 million. Simple.
Or get rid of the salary cap.
But will it make the players better players, giving them more money? I don't think so. Do you, Luke? Would you
attract a better quality?
I am bothered if I'm getting more money. I'll be honest.
Fair play. It's a short career.
Can't
remember if he's got any kids, but can you remember how much Danny Bruff's on?
Yeah, Bruffy will go knocking on the door. I'm here, Ken. Ken will go, Bruffy, you've been here 5 times already this week.
And he'll say, I've had a head knock.
Okay.
I'm a marquee player and I'm tired. Sorry, go on.
Would you have been a marquee player, Scully?
May have been. But we had plenty of quality about in our time. Self, Ellery, Greg, Joe Lydon. Fire was, you know, an unknown, but he was sheer quality. Lee Crooks, Kevin Ward, Sean Edwards, Gary Connolly, Dennis Bates, Phil Clark. You know, so there were plenty of great young British talent about in them days. Plenty.
Fair enough.
Plenty. But the older end as well, if you look from a point of view, you could, I guess, Steve Norton or a Trevor Skerritt, a John Holmes, would they come under the marquee? You know,
you can't compare it because it's never happened before. So they need to sit down and work out exactly what they mean by marquee. The way it was presented last time, it didn't work. It was if you had the money, sod everybody else.
I'll tell you what.
I think it's a little bit more... There's a buy-in from clubs who can't afford marquee players because they can see that it's for the benefit of the sport. There will be some that will definitely want to vote against it. Holler in a very interesting position because I think they were very much for the marquee player, but I'm not sure they've got the money to buy a marquee player, so I think they're now in the camp that might be opposed to it on the basis of the fact that the teams above them will move slightly away.
They're having stewards inquiring into where their salary cap money's going based on what I saw on Friday night, and that's the honest truth.
They've also paid out a huge amount of money on players whose contracts they've
got. I think this all depends on which hat you've got on. Have you got your club hat on, or have you got the games hat on?
Yeah.
You know, the way we're debating this is, are we looking at it from a rugby league perspective of the good of the game, or are you looking at it from your own club who can't spend the money, and it depends which hat you've got on.
Tell you what, John Gallagher, he wasn't the marquee signing.
No, he wasn't a marquee signing, that was the problem.
They were a tent, and they weren't even a tent anyway.
Should have played in the 18.
Yeah. He wouldn't have got in there. Richard Pratt was our fullback. He'd have gone ballistic. What, being replaced by John Gallagher? Do me a favour.
But at the time, the one thing I would say in John Gallagher's favour, which is nothing to do with his playing ability, is that I don't think even today I've seen as many media at Headingley as there were the day they unveiled John Gallagher.
Is that what it's all about, though?
No,
just getting the attention and bringing the newspaper columns to the game?
It is important if you're going to raise the profile of the sport, which is one of the things we're all concerned about, then the ability to go and attract talent either from Australia or from another sport without it penalising the club is something that we should be looking at. Talked about Dwayne Chambers just before.
No, we've got to have some sort of credibility for the game, though, Phil, haven't we?
We need to bring in players that the crowd and the media will get excited about. And if you were playing against Greg Inglis, I reckon that the challenge of playing someone who is the best in the world at their craft would inspire you. And sometimes it doesn't even become about money. It's about having the ability to play with or against the very best. Oh, to measure yourself.
I were over the moon. I shied my socks off when I got the opportunity to play against, I think, Darren Lockyer up against me, Cooper Cronk, other half. So when I went over to Australian, you know, like I acquitted myself quite well. Probably.
I tell you what, you were the man of the series that time. You was playing hooky. You were an outstanding. You were outstanding that time.
I fell over there. Yeah. I went over there with no fear. I had no pressure on me. And also, it's not the only human beings at the day. If they might have a nightmare, I might have the best game in my life. Mm. And you never know. They're obviously better players than I could ever wish to be. But on any given day, I just that was the.
But that wasn't about money. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It wasn't about what you were being paid. It was about playing in an environment that inspired you.
Yeah.
And that if you can bring some of that into our domestic league, let's face it, look at some of the players we've lost to the NRL. If we can slightly reverse that trend or bring them back, who's to say that under a marquee player scheme, St Helens don't immediately go out and sign James Graham?
Yeah, I'll tell you what though, Phil, but also if you listen to the comments from our players who go to the NRL, they want to go to the NRL, not because whether they're getting paid any more money than what they're getting over here, I don't really know that, but they're going over to the NRL because to better themselves as rugby league players, because it's the best competition in the world. That's what they want to go for. My question is, we're going to be bringing over the quality, what Australian players they have been. We're going to be bringing over players who are coming to the end of their career, who have been, had been, we've seen a better thing, and possibly not realistically bringing anything to our game. That's my argument about it.
Let's say one of the players that might come under the marquee ruling is Gareth Widdop, who's at the peak of his career at the moment, but who financially is better off maybe staying in the NRL, but we're giving a team the chance to bring him back.
Right, well, I'll tell you, well, this will be an instance. If Huddersfield signed Gareth Widdop as a halfback, as their marquee signing, at 250 grand a year as their marquee signing, I'll bet your bottom dollar Bruffy would be knocking on the door because he would be saying marquee player, he's British, he's nowhere near as good as me. This is the debate it's going to bring
exactly.
I'm sure some of the Leeds players might do that as well.
Half an hour talking about a marquee player.
20 minutes, 10 minutes, haven't we?
But that's great though, isn't it? Because it's provoking.
It is, because we're nowhere near finding an answer.
Talking
about OKR now. They lost at Catalan at the weekend, a result that sees them drop out of the top eight, and they've got a tough trip to Wigan this weekend. That's the TV game on Friday night. OKR, Scoy.
They're
going to make the top four. Top eight?
I think they're just a little bit inconsistent, aren't they? And if you keep Campese quiet, and also too in Albert Kelly, then they struggle a little bit. But Catalans, they're the team that surprises me, because when you watch them play at home, they run harder, they tackle harder, they create better, but when they're on the road, they're hopeless. So again, that's, you know, from a coach's point of view, it must do his head in, must do his brains in, why they can't transfer that, because let's face it, the channel's only 22 miles wide, it doesn't take them very long to get here, so it's just very interesting how they play so well at home and don't do it on the road. But for Orchids and Rovers, again, with a lot of the teams who are in that bottom four, bottom, you know, six, seven, eight place, it's all about consistency. Will Hull KR make the eight at this moment in time? I'd have to say no.
They're the opposite to us, Hull KR. They can attack, they just don't defend. They're the opposite to where the Huddersfield have been going. They've got some fantastic players. Albert Kelly, Campese, they're great attacking players, but defensively, elite points. So it all depends on how good their attack is. If their attack's better, brilliant at its best, they win games because they're going to concede points. And I agree with Scoy about Carlans. When they run at you and they're at home, it's 100 mile an hour. They fight for the play of the ball. They hit you hard. They try to knock your head off. When they come over here, they just don't have the same sort of vigour and enthusiasm. Mm. I totally agree with it. It's like playing a totally different side, even though the players are the exact same players.
Okay. Fair enough. At RL on our wire, Rich had a few tweets in.
Oh, loads. Dean talking about Wakefield's stadium shenanigans, whatever. Michael Carter in today's League Express saying possibility of moving out of the city because it costs £250,000 a year to play at Bellevue, which is money that could be better spent on, say, players. Dean says, we shouldn't need to go out of Wakefield if promises were kept. I have a statement from Wakefield Captain Johnson.
Go on, hit us with it.
This came into us today. We are incredibly proud of all the rugby teams within our district. We have a long history of top quality sport and want to support its continuation. However, the development of the stadium is a matter between the trust, developer and the club. Wakefield Council statement there. I
don't really say a lot,
does
it, really?
I don't want to have any comments.
They've got a big fence around the council, have they?
Might be a different council.
Are elections due?
Yeah, possibly. No, don't start. No, Scully, no.
Please.
Sure, turn his microphone. Sure.
I'll give my opinion on May the 8th. I'll say that. Dean also says we're talking about what day would you prefer to watch rugby. Say Sunday. Why can't Sky have rugby league on a Sunday? I guess they've got football on half the time, haven't they, or whatever. But
well, what I've been a month.
Well, no, they used to have it on Sundays, but they don't want it anymore. So
they'll be having pre-season friendlies from July.
Yeah,
cricket, golf. Liam likes Fridays. Good for gives you something to look forward to after work, which is true.
Yeah, that's good. But when your team's playing at Wigan and you live in Castleford or Hull, well, yeah, that's not ideal. I mean, Hull KR go to Wigan on Friday night. That, if you're working, you can't go.
Oh yeah, unless you finish work at 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and then, you know, we know what the M62 is like on a Friday tea time. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, my philosophy is every game should be played on Sunday afternoon. Simple as. That's what was promised by the legend and the great person himself, Mr. Morris Lindsay. He said we'd all be playing Sunday afternoons, boiling sun, barbecues, bouncy castles, great family game, crowds are going to be excellent. We're lucky to have one game on a Sunday afternoon.
Everyone misses the Alliance. Liam does, Tom does, Matt does.
Andy Lynch does.
Andy Lynch does. Gareth does. Luke, on the subject of marquee players, they should be one who on name alone would bring people who usually don't go to RL games. So I don't know, Simon Cowell. He'd be a marquee player, I don't know.
You'd like to see him tackle, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
We'd like to see him get run over.
I'd like to see a Kuma tie smash him. Piers Morgan, there's another one.
Thomas, another one, not happy with what's going on with Wakefield and their stadium and so on and so forth.
At RL on our Y, and we have created another Last Tackle episode today, yes. So download that on YouTube. Just search for The Last Tackle, and you can hear more of Scoey ranting on, as you generally do.
I don't. I don't rant.
Maybe
on.
That's why he's tired tonight, because he had to do a last tackle this morning.
Yeah,
you don't make me making me feel tired. Going on about tiredness.
Yeah, are you sure you're going to be all right? I mean, we've got three live games this weekend, Scoey. We've got you down for one of them on Sunday. Are you all right? You don't need to be looking at calling it off.
I'm doing my pre-match. I'm doing my pre-map and whatever you call it, pasta and chicken.
How long do you warm up for?
Warm up, please.
Do you know what my warm up
was? Just a couple of hamstring moves, a couple of calf moves, put a bit of Vaseline on the knees, a bit of Vaseline on the eyebrows, stick the gum shield in, and let's get out and do the business. There you go. As Luke said, preparation's been done throughout all the week. All this nonsense with it and the tackle bags getting up and down off the ground. And
Luke, you go for 10 pints after training like Scoey used to on a Tuesday.
I'm drunk after about a pint. So.
We won't. I tell you what, below will tell you, because he just got into the first team, and me and Colin Maskell took him out one after training one afternoon, and we went to the Fleece in Stanley, and we put about a gallon away in about an hour and 45 minutes, and when we dropped him off,
please drink responsibly.
When we dropped him off at home, his mother went absolutely ballistic. What have you done to our Paul? What have you done to our Paul? Yeah, put him in bed. We've only had a gallon.
Huddersfield Leeds live on Thursday.
He won't smile in them, but anyway.
Hull Salford, if Salford turn up live on Friday, and Sunday we're live at the Providence Stadium for.
Hey, what will happen? Let's just say Salford say, listen, we can't play this game and we're not turning up. What will happen there?
Well, remember,
do we know?
Middlesbrough did that, didn't they, in the old Premier League?
Yeah, they got
didn't
relegated because those were the
got
points
relegated
that
because of it.
So,
we haven't got enough fit players.
But will they give the Hull the 2 points, and will they just award them the 2 points if they don't turn up, or will they get fined? Or
I assume they just award them 2 points and fine them.
What about points difference, if that's the difference between getting in the eight or playing in the.
Well, don't they have locally? Don't you win 18-0 or something?
24.
Yeah, that's how it works. Amateur, innit? If you didn't turn up, you.
Yeah.
You're 18-0.
Could that be a chance, do you think? Do you think they may do that?
Why don't you give your mate Marwan a ring and say, look, you always say you could still do 20 minutes.
Guess something if you're British Asian Rugby Association lads again.
Yeah,
it's all about insurance. And but I want Hull to win. I don't want to be turning out for
that. Biggest I don't want to be turning out
for Salford and winning for Salford against Hull. Jesus Christ, I'm not liked as it is.
But this is the man who next week is availing himself of the hospitality of the owner of Salford, saying, I want Hull to win. Your invitation will be rescinded.
Right, Philip, do you honestly believe Salford are going to win on Friday?
I think psychologically they might have played a blinder here. There's no pressure on them, is there? They're talking about Ian Watson coming out of retirement at the age of 38 to play.
Yeah.
All the pressure is on Hull. It was on them anyway. It was a game they had to win.
If they turn up...
Now they've got to win 40-0.
I'll tell you what, at the time, if they turn up, it may happen, the win, because quite clearly, as Luke saw on Friday night and so did Mark Wilson on Friday night, Hull cannot create. And if they don't score, quite clearly... I would say against Salford between 14, 18, 20 points, they may not beat Salford. Simple as that.
Salford have to turn up or they should be charged with bringing the game into disrepute.
They should. We're here until 9 o'clock. Luke Robinson of the Huddersfield Giants is our guest in the studio. Luke, who would you put your career down to? Who would you most like to thank? Who had a helping hand as you were a youngster playing rugby league?
My mum and dad.
Yeah?
Yeah. They literally used to drive me around here, there and everywhere, do you know what I mean? I played every sport you could think of, really. At school, that's all I wanted to do, was play sport. Where on a night time, I'd rush home from being a sheet metal worker, come pick me up from school, drive me over to Wigan, won't get back till 10:30 at night. There were no scholarships in them days. I think I was the only lad that didn't live in Wigan, pretty much. So, yeah, they put the life on hold, really, by just driving me up and down country. So, yeah. My mum and dad.
Good stuff. You mentioned your dad earlier. Does he still come and watch you play?
Yeah, he's been probably although the biggest influence, my biggest critic as well. You know, if I had a bad game, I'd never heard the end of it, really. He obviously got that involved, really. He was giving me, I won't say an ironing, but he was giving me a good shouting at if I was being lazy or something like that. But yeah, they still come to every game. And then my wife as well. Her and her student mates, I think, Team Robbo, they called for a little while on TV.
Yeah, you've got your own little fan club there, haven't you? Yeah, they're all right.
They just use it as an excuse. You'd fit in well with them. You know what they are? They're just all drunks.
What time do they get there? where do they meet? What time? I'll tell you what, if they're the gallon and a half birds, I'll tell you what, I'm there.
they've already got the magic, already sorted, they're already in Newcastle, they're up there. Friday night, they're straight on.
Where are they staying? Where?
Straight on, Friday night, Saturday night, come and watch us Sunday. They'll be absolutely blind drunk by the time of our game. They just use me as an excuse to get together, I think.
It's nice to have someone as honest as Scully on the show, and Luke. He's certainly been worth waiting for.
He's been a pleasure, hasn't he? Yeah, he's been an absolute pleasure. So
Why is he not on telly? The other Super League
players, when he come on the show, lighten up and be honest like Luke Robinson. He has set the bar now. He's got, I would say, 9 out of 10 for the performance tonight. So, Super League players, relax. Open up a little bit and it will be respected.
Does that make him a marquee pundit then? Do we have to pay
him? Without a shadow of a doubt. He's a marquee pundit.
Yeah, two cups of tea as opposed
exactly.
to water.
Yeah. Well, we'll sort that out next time.
You get more than what I get. I get bird seeds.
You mentioned who was his biggest influence beforehand, and I'm not pensioning you off, but have you started thinking about what you're going to do when rugby finishes? Because there's a big topic at the moment about trying to find opportunities for players, perhaps in spheres that you've had to give up to be a professional rugby league player. There's players going on courses to be joiners and electricians and plumbers. Do you know yet what you're going
to
be doing?
I went to university actually at Leeds when Kev Sinfield and Jamie Jones and Diskin Hall did it, and Leeds Met set up I came out of school with nothing. I said I did football, but thankfully they're not. I went back and got on with it and I've got a degree. I don't know which way I want to go with. I don't have a look at the strength and conditioning side of it or the coach. I'd like to stay in the game. I want to stay within the game. But me and Earl Crabtree were talking about this the other day in showers amongst other things. But anyway, we're just discussing. We don't think there's enough. We don't think there's enough rugby league players involved in the journalism side of it. Not only on the TV, but the radio and the writing, the column inches. I think there should be. We should be pushing for more ex-rugby players. We're the ones that play the game, but I think my future, man, not sure my wife's too happy about it, but I want to be a coach, I think, really.
Shouldn't you be the coach that stays till late till the kids are in bed then?
Pretty much, yeah. For that reason. But no,
Long day, lads.
She wants her weekends back, and my wife's a teacher, so she wants her as holidays during the 6 week holidays when we're playing. But I think I'd like to go down the coaching route. But as you say, you know, it's something that don't last forever, as you'll know, Scully. You know, you can be the best coach in the world, it might only last for 4 years. So you've probably got to have somebody else to back
four games if you like Scully.
Okay, Mr. Wilson. Actually, 13 games at Huddersfield. I could give you the stats if you want. The coaches
go on,
after
then.
Me.
Yeah,
the coaches that follow me. Phil Beavers, no wins out of 10. Tony Smith, to get two victories, it took him, I think, 18 games. John Keir, it took him 16 games. Malcolm Rayleigh, it took him 20 games, and I got two games in 13 before I got the sack. Due to a sports psychologist. So if you believe in stats, have a better coach than Tony Smith, Malcolm Rayleigh, John Keir and Phil Beavers. But the story will tell you, except Malcolm, they're all still in the game, and Scully sat here on a Monday night.
And
I had five games in charge at Barrow, and I won three games out of five. So it's not a bad stat if you believe in that nonsense in stats. But I must admit, I enjoy doing the media, enjoy doing the punditry. And at the end of the day, as I've just mentioned there with Luke about open and honest has been, that's all I am. I give an open and honest opinion. Whether people like it or whether people don't, quite simple. Everybody has to take criticism, and at times everybody will get applauded and everybody will get pats on the back, and that's what it's all about. And when you do retire as a player, then you are entitled to an opinion. It's as simple as that.
But isn't it another reason why we need A teams? So that you can start your coaching apprentice.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. And obviously you've got the 19s, but you know, back when I was great, it was 18s, scholarship, 18s, 21, but the second team with me. And then that's how you...
But again, if we brought it back and we had an extra pool of players, we'd also be able to groom the next generation of coaches.
Yeah, because I'm another one as well. I just think that just because you say good day, mate, and you don't say hey up, pal, you get a job. And I do think we bring Australians over. I know that talking to a lot of the ex-Salford boys, there's been a few Australians that have been absolutely woeful, but they've got the job. Just on the sheer fact that they're Australian as opposed to
British. But
isn't
that the management at the club? Not having a strong enough management at the club?
Yeah, I think so. And I also think it seems strange how they continually sack coaches eventually. Why don't you ask the question of who's making these signings? Why aren't they putting why aren't they asking questions of the person that's signing the coach?
Fair enough. At RL on our YSO, Michael has tweeted. Is he Michael Carter, Wakefield chairman and owner? What's he had to say about the ground?
Says, the council still don't get it that Wakefield Trinity Wildcats was never a party to the 106. This is this agreement which has been made with the developers and the council and whoever. It provides a community stadium where we would be anchor tenants, which is a stadium which at the moment is not being built or is anywhere near being built.
Ongoing saga.
Yeah, plenty of people having their opinion on the council, none of which we can read. But Stephen says,
why not? Scully's got an opinion on everything.
I think we can read them after May the 8th. Until then, we can't read them. Stephen says, we need the support to ensure a new state-of-the-art stadium will be a dream for Wakefield and the city. It is important, but a new stadium is not the cure-all. It is not the TCP that will sort out all of Wakefield's ills. Look at Salford with their new stadium and their crowds, and they are no further forward, and they would be even further backwards were it not for Dr. Marwan Kukash. So,
Richard, if Wakefield do get relegated, will they become a Super League club again, do you think, or do you think that will be it?
It will take a lot for them to come back, you would think.
Okay. But we nearly had a minute's silence for you there, Rich. We're going to start crying.
Come October, it may be that way, but...
So, I guess we'll just throw with a little bit. We've only got 2 minutes to go. The idea of what Phil Kappen threw in, what, not last week, maybe the week before, merging. Would that be a way back for Wakefield into Super League? Not my suggestion, by the way, it was Phil Kappen's suggestion.
That
2 weeks ago.
He did mention it. He's
shine away from it, Phil.
I think the concept was In 95, it was merge or die. There is an alternative. I think Cumbria is an interesting example.
Oh, no, we're not about Cumbria. We're not about what you said.
Principle of merger. I think you're looking at putting what might be termed a franchise in a geographical area, but keeping the constituent parts as a feeder.
We're going to merge with Huddersfield.
You can tell there's an election on, can't you? You can tell there's an election on.
You, you're barred. Mentioning the merger word 1.5 minutes before the end of the show. We're talking football next in here. You've done me in. You've done me in. Three live commentaries. Huddersfield against Leeds on
Matt
Thursday
Wilson has been
night.
A pleasure.
Hull against Salford if they turn up on Friday. We're live there. And on Sunday, it's the Bulls against Sheffield Eagles. Thanks to Luke Robinson for being a great guest.
Always.
Brilliant. Thanks to Phil. Thanks to Scully, as always. Thanks to Rich. Thanks to you for listening. Make sure you keep it Radio Yorkshire. We are going to be talking all things football after 9 o'clock as well. You can get in touch with us at RL on RY. Download The Last Tackle on YouTube. You're going to watch that, our latest show this week.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire at RL on RY.